This is Simply Lowai, and you're listening to The Expert with a Heart.
Welcome back to Simply Lowai, everybody, the podcast series with The Expert with a Heart. And today we're continuing our conversation around cross-border financial planning, because if you didn't pick up on it, this is something that IMMPL, International Money Matters Private Limited, focuses very, very heavily on, is very good at as well. May I just say, from all of the conversations we've had, these are trusty hands that you can fall into if cross-border financial planning is relevant to you. Now, today's conversation is going to be about how NRIs, right, can get their financial plans right in the cross-border context. A lot for us to unpack here. As I've been seeing, cross-border financial planning is like the gift that keeps on giving. It does not stop, really. So we've got Lowai Nablaki, of course, the CEO and MD of International Money Matters Private Limited. And we've also got Sneha Jaggar, who's a returnee on the podcast series. She is SVP Client Relations Americas and Europe. Hello. Thanks, Sneha. Hi. Good to have you here.
Thank you so much.
All right, Lowai, you ready?
I am ready.
You seem to agree very, like, you know, enthusiastically with the gift that keeps on giving comment. Do you genuinely feel that way?
I think we, frankly and selfishly, we keep learning with every situation that we come across. Also, over time, regulations change. So keeping pace with that is interesting.
Exciting.
And, you know, for all those who think income tax is a problem and you have to deal with taxes in India, imagine if this was with more than one jurisdiction, keeping a tab of whatever is going on in each of these places. So, yes, it's good fun.
Yeah, good fun indeed. Okay, so, you know, the last episode, we left off on an interesting note, which was that cross-border financial planning is actually becoming increasingly relevant because people are not restricted to geographies, to borders anymore. Opportunities come up, they move around. And with that come a lot of different financial implications that they may not be aware of. But let's talk about those complexities, right? What comes up? I think the list is endless, I'm gauging from the looks that both of you are giving me, especially Sneha. So do you want to start us off on what are some of the most common financial complexities that cross-border clients face or come across?
For us, one of the common ones is, how do I consolidate and get one view?
Okay.
They may have an advisor who is looking at India isolated, or looking at country one isolated, and then they may have another advisor who's looking at country two isolated.
Okay.
Is there an advisor who's looking at multi-currency portfolio, multi-currency goals, and creating a plan which can cover everything for them across geographies? And it may not be one, two, it could be three and more as well.
Right.
So that's where it starts. And many a times advice is given on only one side, not looking at the other side. It's very important that you look at the other side as well. Otherwise, the advice becomes incomplete.
No, that's very valid. I think a full picture is always necessary, even in this context. So, like I said, today we're going to be talking specifically about how NRIs, you know, whether they're moving abroad, coming back to India, how can they get their financial plan right? How can it stay safe and sound throughout, right? But before we do that, interestingly, did not know that there are multiple definitions of an NRI. So how do you usually define who an NRI is?
So I think so obviously the I is saying that this is a Indian. So Indian means that you have an Indian passport.
Yes.
Okay. If it's an Indian passport, then there are certain rules based on tax residency that apply. And people know about that. They'll say, okay, if I'm out for more than 180 days, or I've not been in India for so many years, I don't have to pay taxes on, you know, income which is global.
Yeah.
But the issue really that you have to take into account is that before income tax, there is the application of FEMA, or Foreign Exchange Management Act.
Okay.
Which defines what your purpose really is to determine whether your bank account has to be changed from resident to non-resident. So people think that, okay, if today I get a job offer in a company in, say, Germany, and I'm moving there and it's a permanent job offer, I'm going to leave today and Now I'm also going to go and take a flat on rent. I'm moving my child over there, getting school admission. So I'm doing all the things which is with an intention of being outside of India. Then the moment I get that job offer and I'm now moving, I have to change my bank status to non-resident. So I become a non-resident bank account holder for income tax purposes. If this I am, you know, I've been here for 8-10 months of the year and it's the last 2 months of the year that I'm leaving. For income tax purposes, I'll still be resident. But from FEMA point of view, I'm a non-resident. So people don't A, know that. B, there is not really good enough mechanisms for the banks or others to find out whether you are falling in A category or B. And they are not very strict about enforcing it. But it is outside the realm of law for you to maintain a resident account if you have moved abroad.
Ah, okay. Yep. Did not know that at all. Okay. So let's now move into NRIs investing, right? Are they allowed to invest in Indian mutual funds at all?
Yes, they are allowed to invest in Indian mutual funds. They are allowed to invest in NPS. They are allowed to purchase land. They are allowed to do a lot of things.
Okay.
Only restrictions come in when there are certain countries involved, like the US and Canada. There are certain restrictions. Not every mutual fund will be available. That's from the investment point of view. Apart from that, do we want them to invest into mutual funds or no is another question, because we have to make sure that the investments that are done in India by the NRIs are easy to file for or comply with in their resident countries. So while your question is only one-fold, which talks about can they invest in India? Yes, India allows. But is it good to do all these investments or some of these investments? That's where we come in and we say that let's review what is your resident country.
Yeah.
And therefore, what options would work the best for you to, you know, manage a holistic portfolio?
Fair enough. I mean, you know, just because something is allowed doesn't necessarily mean it's always going to be good for you. But what are the tax implications then?
So when you are moving or returning, you're not really changing your portfolio anyway. So there is no tax implication unless and until there is a sale involved. However, if you speak to us, we will plan it out for you. Are there certain things in your portfolio to be done? Certain investments that you can get rid of? You know, create a holistic portfolio so that while you're away, this is going to perform better for you without having to do too many transactions. Yes, once you've moved away, now there can be 2-3 scenarios. You move away thinking you're going to come back in 2-3 years and the portfolio construction is going to be different. You will move away saying that I am not coming back. I would rather start, you know, keeping this as a backup plan, but I would like to be abroad. The construction would be different.
Yeah.
And then there will be a set who will come and say that I don't know whether I will come back or no. So that's the open area. Can you help me as and when, you know, we make some decision? So the portfolio design for them would be a little different again, keeping in mind that they may or may not come back to India.
And I think we've seen enough cases where people have left saying that we are going there and going to be back in 3 years and then decide, no, we are not coming back. The people who said we are moving there and then after a couple of years saying, okay, now we are moving to a different country or we are coming back. So I think life happens while you make plans. So those things you have to keep in mind. I suppose the issue that you really need to take care of is what are the things that you do now and versus if you do it later after you move, what is the implication of those, right? So if you were an Indian and you had mutual funds and you sold them now, the tax implication is X. But if you moved overseas, depending on the country you moved to, and then you sold the same mutual fund, and the implication is, say, X plus 5%, then you know that you are going to postpone this. By postponing this decision, the tax impact is 5% more.
Yeah.
There could be an appreciation which takes care of it. There could be a further depreciation. which means that your tax actually is the same, but your value is also, you know, much lower. So those are things that you have to take into account before you decide what action. But knowing those, or at least having planned for some situations like these, is really helpful. So the moment you know that, you would tell our clients that the moment you know that, okay, the company is considering moving me in September, so it's 4 months later, I'm thinking it's possible, flag it off. So at least we know that in case that decision is taken next month, these are the actions that we are going to do before you move. Or we might tell you, you know, can you just move on 5th of October or so that your tax implication for the next year is much better.
I have to say, you're indeed very handy partners to have in this journey. But, you know, there's one thing that we hear a lot when it comes to one's personal finance planning, right? Which is, hey, diversify your portfolio as much as possible. There's so many asset classes. So diversification in general is always looked at as a good thing, right? That protects you or bolsters you in some way. Now, when it comes to geographies and the diversification of that, are there any actual benefits to having invested in multiple places? And this is not asset classes, it's literal countries. What are your thoughts there?
So when we talk to clients, we always start with how many currencies do you have in your portfolio? You might be having assets in India, which is INR. You may be earning in dollars. You might have some previous company savings in some other country, right? So it starts from there, understanding what currently exists. Then we drive on to the goals. Where do you actually want to achieve these goals? Is it involved with these countries or no? Then we come down and understand what is the asset allocation, the risk appetite that they have. We come down to that. How much should be debt? How much should be equity? Then we come down to actually making an investment plan to say that, okay, which currency, what exposure, how much of debt, how much of equity, and so on. Today, you do not really need to have INR to invest in India. You can hold dollars and have diversify your investments in India. When we are looking at true diversification, we are making sure that there are currencies involved. There are also asset classes involved. And then how we can use the existing currencies that you want in your portfolio and diversify further into other countries. So from the research point of view, yes, of course, there are cycles in the market. There may be more interest in the emerging markets and we would want to move some money there. But it's not that difficult when you do it with us because we have one currency that we can maintain giving you all of these exposures.
I think the question that you asked, whether there is benefit of diversifying, of course there is. So the simple question to ask is, okay, if you had money today and you knew, you had to choose between two stocks in India to invest in, which of these two stocks would you invest in? If you were right, you will, you know, you've made money. If you're wrong, you've lost money.
Yeah.
Right. So obviously it's not just two stocks. You tend to do a basket. And there'll be some things you'll do better, something will do worse, something will do better at one point in time and then change. The same thing happens when you move from stocks into now, let's say, groups of stocks, large cap, mid cap, small cap.
Yes.
There are periods when that happens. So then you expand this and say, okay, how is India done versus US versus Germany versus China versus Japan. So it's different at each point in time. And the same thing, then you apply and overlay this with the currency. Then you get a mix. So you know that unless you are an astrologer, and we've spoken about this earlier, that we are not, you don't know where to put all your eggs. So you need to diversify.
Yeah, no, there's definitely benefits to it. But let's look at the flip side of that. You brought up at the beginning of the conversation that there's often things that NRIs don't register, right? As that it's going to be an implication, it's going to be an issue. And that's why, of course, you come in. So what are the most common mistakes or pitfalls you've seen where NRIs, in the situation of NRIs investing in Indian stocks, what tends to go wrong there if awareness is not at the highest?
One thing that I've seen happening very often is taking advice from a CA. So typically a CA will give you the correct answer for India only, but not look at the other resident country where you are from. To give you a simple example, we all know that if you're selling a residential asset in India and reinvesting into a residential property, you don't have to pay taxes. No capital gains are implied. So the CA will generally say that, okay, you're selling a house, why don't you buy another house? We can do away with the capital gains. But depending on which country you are in, you will have to pay taxes there. So for example, if you are in UK, UK will have capital gains that you have to pay. So even if you have reinvested the money here, you have to declare it there and then have the cash flow available to pay taxes in the UK. So is it a holistic advice to say that, you know what, reinvest the entire amount? Maybe not. Maybe you could have done better with it. If you had a cash flow crunch, then it will be a very difficult situation for you to pay taxes in the UK.
Right.
So this is one of the biggest mistakes I've seen happening. And for us also, to be very honest, we can't know every country and we can't know every tax rule. So we have a network of partners who we work with, who are CPAs, CAs, advisors in different countries. And that's how we can bring in the expertise in front of the client to say that, yes, we are helping you with this, but hold on. We will get a consultation done on tax for this purpose and get back to you so that the advice is holistic.
I think in the past, I would notice is people did not have information. I did not know that because I had some FDs in India and I am now living abroad for the last 10 years, I have not declared that income of that Indian FD in the country where I am, which by law required you to do it. Or I did not even pay the taxes in India because they were anyway deducting tax at source, but I didn't file my returns. So there was a gap in that information itself. I think now it's moved to wrong information.
Okay.
So information is there, but I have now heard from my colleague that, somebody I knew, so WhatsApp University, somebody I knew did this, so I have gone and done this. And they say, okay, now solve this problem for me. And it's sometimes too late to unravel you from that. But at least we want to make sure that we don't compound it and don't, further, make that whole thing much, much worse.
Messier, right? Yeah, absolutely. So let's take a look at retirement planning in the cross-border scenario. This is something Lobai loves talking about because there's so much to consider. As both of you mentioned, plans keep changing, they evolve. But I think one thing that NRIs, a lot of NRIs know that, okay, after this age, for sure, I think I want to come back home. I want to settle down in India. And I want to retire there, basically. So does the planning for that have to start much earlier? Because you're now talking about cross-border finances, assets all over the place. And how would you advise them to start that journey?
So if somebody is very clear that they're going to come back to India, then of course, the retirement part of their portfolio, we would like to build here also. There will be certain portion of retirement that may be happening in the resident country, just like we have EPF, NPS, etc. The resident countries will also have equivalent retirement accounts that they may have created there. But is that going to be enough or no? That's the bit of analysis that we do. And then how much to be built in India? And of course, it's important that they do something over here also, because that cash, that capital needs to be available when they move to India. So that's how we look at it. We may say, depending on, again, the family situations, that we could invest in dollars itself. Don't do INR right now. But suppose they have properties already and rental incomes are coming from there. Then the reinvestment of that, we will continue to do in INR. And start looking at that income in INR to be put aside for their retirement requirements.
And what are the key investment opportunities that you always recommend that NRIs, take advantage of? participate in?
Mostly we look at equities because we try and build the debt portfolio in the home country they are in, because that's where their short-term goal requirements, etc., would be there. But when they are looking at India, we try and build an equity portfolio. And there are enough and more options available, whether it's mutual funds, whether it is AIFs, PMS. And like I said earlier, need not have these NRO, NRE accounts in India also to invest. They can even do it via their dollar-denominated accounts directly into Indian equities and have dollars coming back into their account. Taxes only in their home country. Don't have to worry about tax filing in India also.
Okay. All right. Perfect. So now, here's the thing, right? As an organization, I think all of these episodes that we've done, it's clearly come through that there's a lot when it comes to cross-border financial planning that has to be taken into account. I'm sure there are, you know, planners out there who can help, but how do you usually differentiate yourself as IMMPL, when it comes to cross-border financial planning in the planning process, right? Of course, there's the network, which is supremely important in this context, but is there a different approach that you take to this act, you know, these conversations and this planning process that really differentiates us from the rest of the crowd?
So we started doing cross-border as our clients started moving.
Okay.
And it has been about 10, 15 years we are doing it. So our understanding of certain types of investments in various countries have also increased over period. So when we present the plan, we also start looking and recommending what are good or not so good things to do while they are residing in ABC country. And that holistic picture helps them to, you know, go back and say, oh yeah, I didn't think of this investment. If you're suggesting, I'll go back and look at it. Again, we are at a suggestion level. We may not be able to go and help actually execute that because it's in a different country. But what happens is there is a push and then they are like, okay, yeah, this is something I've missed. Thank you. I will move ahead and do it. So that holistic picture comes in. We review not just investments, but insurance requirements. Whether you should have global insurance or no, whether you should have insurance only in India because you already have your resident country insurance taken care of,
yeah.
So on and so forth. And of course, the multi-currency portfolio, which you can view in one go. You don't have to have 10 different reports open and then reconcile at your end. You're able to do it in one go from our side. And the experience that we carry, because we've had many clients going through different experiences and we've seen life cycles with the clients. So sometimes when the clients are actually stuck, we can also tell them that, hey, why don't you speak to this client, because this client was in that situation and maybe that would add value as well.
So what we realized is that as clients, you know, moved to different countries, they needed a holistic solution which took care of taxation, reporting, inheritance tax, banking, whole bunch of things, currency.
Yeah.
And we found large players were hesitant to do this.
Yeah.
So our approach was then to say, can we find like-minded partners in these different expertise areas in different jurisdictions to help? So initially it was just 1+1. So I'm in India and now I want somebody in US, somebody in UK. And then as you went deeper, you realize that even for people outside India, if they wanted, say, help from us saying which tax advisor should I use, we were offering different options because we said, okay, for you, it's just simple, only a rental income. For somebody else, oh, now you've sold property, there's capital gain, there's money moving in and out, you need a little more complex. So yes, we'll get you a little more experienced tax advisor.
Yeah.
So we realized that the same thing applied when we are looking at CPAs in other countries, advisors in other countries. So we started creating a sort of a virtually like a community or a network of those. And as we started dealing with clients, we found clients telling us, oh, you know, my advisor over here is top class because he does ABC. He said, why don't you introduce us to him? Because if he had other clients, then we could refer to him. And if he had something else which had an India connection, he could refer back to us.
Yeah.
Or you'd say the tax guy is really good. So we'd connect and then say, okay, are you looking for getting more business? Would you be okay if we gave you references like this? So I think it's grown over time and we've learned. And then, as I mentioned, after the two countries, we've started seeing complexities of three, sometimes four countries.
Yeah.
So then finding people who are able to say, okay, we can connect with the network of people with expertise in these four countries, and we can together give one solution, so that when we are telling the client, they're saying, here is the one associate. That one associate now has three product partners. So it's sort of compounding, right?
And, I think through all of these conversations, it has become very clear that cross-border financial planning has a lot of elements, right? There's a lot of moving parts, and it can sometimes feel overwhelming when you're not supported by an organization that has a network or, you know, an advisor who knows what they're doing with your financial plan. But I think it's the most important to get out of that feeling of aloneness and find an advisor that can support you through that and knows what they're doing. I'm getting to it. IMMPL is a very good, route for that to make it happen. They're always with you. And like we've been exploring, have this amazing network. So tap into that if you feel like you need to. But I think most importantly, always keep the communication open and remember that you've got to get started at some point, right? So that's a wrap on today's episode. Thank you so much, Sneha and Lovai, for joining us. And we'll be back with you very soon.
Thank you.
That was an episode of the Simply Lovai podcast series, Expert with a Heart.